It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, so Payne and Pendergast with you on a Football Friday. Sunday, 7:20 kickoff, 4:20 Texans countdown out at the stadium. I cannot wait. First real primetime game since 2019 for the Houston Texans. I'm not counting back in the 2021 and 2022 seasons where you still had to give every team a Thursday game. That doesn't count. This is a legit, we want to put these guys on national TV primetime game, and it's awesome. It's going to be fun. So the last time they did one of these was back in 2019 against the New England Patriots. A win for the Houston Texans, led by Deshaun Watson and DeAndre Hopkins. My times have changed. So yeah. Here we are, Sunday Night Football. Caleb Williams, CJ Stroud, going to be a whole lot of fun. Both teams 1-0 also. I don't know that the Bears necessarily deserve to be 1-0. Well, they deserve it. You win games certain kind of ways. I don't know that this is a sustainable way to remain undefeated. Block
punts.
It's not,
punts. Caleb Williams is the first rookie quarterback drafted number one overall to win his first game since David Carr.
Yeah.
And I think that's pretty much, I think David had a better game that day versus the Cowboys than Caleb Williams did. But it was that kind of a performance. It was the special teams and the defense of the Bears that just destroyed the Titans in a lot of ways. And that's where it's, but it is, you know what? I'm glad that they won that game that way, because it's very easy for the Texans coaches to look at last week's game and for Bobby Slowick offensively to say, all right, look, you see some of the mistakes we made last week. Let's watch this defense. Let's watch their interceptions from last year. This is a team that can capitalize on your mistakes.
Yep.
We can't have these little hiccups and get away with it against this defense nearly like we may have been able to last week. So let's clean this stuff up ASAP.
Yep. So Seth, half the league is 0-1 right now. That's the way it works. There were no ties last week, so half the league is 0-1. And there's a lot of teams I'm really rooting to go 0-2, in part because I don't like those teams, or I don't like their quarterback, or they're teams that I'm, like in the case of the Colts, them going 0-2 would be a real nice boon in the division here for the Texans, because I think the Colts are the second best team in this division. I put the teams that are 0-1 into three buckets as far as how I'm looking at them possibly going 0-2. There are six teams that I am on my knees praying lose this weekend, because I think 0-2 could make for some really intriguing Mondays for these teams.
Right, right.
There's a few teams there's a few that I'm praying for. There's a few that I think are just merely intriguing, like Baltimore going 0-2 to start the season. I don't hate the Ravens. I just think it would be really interesting that a team like that be 0-2. And then there's a few teams I just don't care. Like the Raiders, they go 0-2. If a Raider falls in the woods, does it make a noise? Like that kind of thing. Here are the six teams that I'm praying go 0-2. And I'll see if you will be heading to church with me to get on your knees and pray as well.
Yeah, God loves it when you pray for failure of others.
Stuff.
That's
yes.
It's
yes, it's John 4:16. Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
The New York Jets. Now, I know they're playing the Tennessee Titans, and empirically it would seem like, okay, we should be rooting against the Titans. We hate the Titans. No, the Titans will take care of sucking on their own this season. I don't need to pray for the Titans to lose. The Jets starting out 0-2 with a whole bunch of primetime games coming up, and Robert Saleh with that dead, my soul is dead look on his face, and Aaron Rodgers. The Jets going 0-2 would be very, very fun.
I feel I can't enjoy your you delighting in Robert Saleh's misfortune or bad, unfortunate situation, because I like Robert Saleh a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
And I feel like he's been thrust into a situation where, if it weren't the Jets and if Robert Saleh hadn't been the coach the previous year where they also didn't have a quarterback, I think last year people would have said, like, wow, you know what? That guy didn't have a quarterback. He didn't have an actual viable quarterback the entire year. And look at what he did with that Jets team. And instead, he's getting lambasted because mostly he doesn't know how to properly answer impossible to answer questions about Aaron Rodgers.
Right.
So, I hear the biggest criticism of Robert Saleh is like, well, he just doesn't look like he knows what to say when people ask him impossible to answer questions. Like, All right. I don't know. I like the drama of all of it.
Yeah.
I feel like with Aaron Rodgers, the part that annoys me is that there's part of Aaron Rodgers where just, I, like, I want to I want to pray for his demise simply because of the football stuff and the way he's operated on football. But he's become a crossover sensation into where it becomes political and people think you're making a statement about vaccines or something. Part of that's because of the way Aaron Rodgers handles it himself.
Big part.
And
yeah.
Like, I just, no, I, the fact that Nathaniel Hackett is his offensive coordinator is the reason that I want him to fail.
Yeah.
Because this is everything, this has all the hallmarks of a diva who wants things his way, even though it's not actually good for the team.
Okay.
And so they've got, they're up there with a bad offensive coordinator and an aging quarterback who's not as athletic as he used to be. I want it to blow up in their faces.
So you're with me on this. You just didn't like my drive-by on Robert Saleh's hollow soul.
I didn't like that. And yeah. I feel like I have to point out that, like, I'm not trying to make some grandiose political statements about vaccines
right.
or anything. I have a long-standing record of Rodgers kind of annoying me.
Yeah,
like,
I got
long
you.
Before I ever knew what a COVID was.
I got you. All right, let's get to these other ones here. Denver hosts the Pittsburgh Steelers. Denver going 0-2. I think we just illustrated why at the end of the previous segment with Cowherd, slurping at the altar of Sean Payton and Bo Nix right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, no, and also, like, the most realistic scenario as various scenarios have been painted out to me over the last year is that the Broncos really wanted DeMeco Ryans, and that Sean Payton wasn't necessarily as put out by his Zoom call as guys like Colin Cowherd might have had you believe.
Right.
But flat out, the Texans had a better option in DeMeco Ryans, and also the Walmart money from the ownership out there in Denver is going to be able to money whip just about anybody in the league.
Yep.
So, yeah. Sean Payton acting like, oh, no, I was always their first choice.
Right.
Yeah, you can go die a football death,
Thank
Sean
you.
Payton.
There you go. There
Thank you
go. You. All right, the third one. There's six teams I'm praying go 0-2 this weekend. Cleveland is the third one. I don't think we need to do it. Now, the only interesting thing about Cleveland is they play Jacksonville. So, in theory, we should be rooting for Cleveland because Jacksonville's in the division and Jacksonville will go 0-2, and that would be great. I just can't bring myself to root for Deshaun Watson. So I need this Cleveland thing. I need the misery in Cleveland to continue for weeks and weeks.
You know what? I was watching this show, The Terror, on Netflix, and there are a couple scenes in here where you get to the point where you're like, all right, just put a pillow over this dude's face and put him out of his misery, please.
Yeah.
Just, I feel like that for Browns fans. You got to just rip the Band-Aid off and take your medicine. Like, this thing is over. The best for everybody involved is if Deshaun Watson plays just so incredibly bad that you have to cut ties and move on with your life.
Yep.
Or put the pillow over his face and smother him to death.
Thank you. That's what I was waiting for. There you go.
Metaphorically.
Metaphorically, of course. The fourth one, the Indianapolis Colts. And this one actually is more like football, empirical. I mean, I hate the Colts. And so, you know, team I hate going 0-2. But they play Malik Willis this week. And they play Green Bay up in Green Bay with Malik Willis starting. They go 0-2. With Malik Willis starting, I'm guessing in Indianapolis, they're looking at this game right now, like the fans, as like they got a break. They caught a break. They got a free roll here because they didn't have to catch Jordan Love in Green Bay. They get Malik Willis, who has been abjectly terrible as an NFL quarterback. This would be big for the Texans, I think, if the Colts go 0-2 to start the season and the Texans go 2-0.
I feel like for this entire week we're on social media, you've been seeing over and over again the most incredible throw I've ever seen out of Anthony Richardson.
Yes, I'm tired of this.
I really feel like you could have the same caption on him misfiring to the wide open A.D. Mitchell in the end zone.
Agreed.
It's one of the most incredible throws I've ever seen. It's
incredibly
like,
poor.
I want Malik Willis to out-quarterback Anthony Richardson.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, that's what I'm
100%
saying.
Yeah, I 100% want that.
Okay, good. We're on the same page there. The last two. Praying these teams start 0-2. I mean, the Giants. The Giants face the Commanders in Washington. I need the misery of John Mara to continue. Ooh. I also need Saquon to get three more touchdowns this weekend. And so, did you see what Saquon did? Joe, did you see what Saquon did? Joe Shane, Brian Daboll, Daniel Jones, I need misery in New York. And plus, Giant fans are obnoxious. I need misery up in New York.
If I had to choose, like if we were to say Bobby Slowick accepts a head coaching job this offseason, there's nothing you can do about it. He's going to accept one. I would feel I'd feel good. I'd feel happy for him if he went to the Giants.
I would too.
I think as long as they got rid of Joe Shane, the GM.
Yes, yes.
You know,
yes.
I think that
and Daniel Jones, the quarterback. Like start.
Yeah, well,
fresh.
right. Yeah, I don't want him going up there and it's like and that he has to see if you can make it work with Daniel Jones.
Brian Daboll did, and that's what's going to ultimately get him fired. He actually fixed Daniel Jones enough to get him a big deal and have to have him stick around for two more years?
The biggest mistake he made as a coach was overperforming with that team the first year.
100%. I'm not even joking about it. Like, he should have just, like, I know he was doing his best.
Like Brian Flores.
Dude,
he should have, you know?
Yeah. Well, if they were just flat out bad that year, they weren't going to fire Brian Daboll if they went 4-13. He's a first year coach with a bad quarterback. They could have drafted CJ Stroud potentially instead of extending Daniel Jones. So, yeah, I'm with you. Yeah, Giants, I'd be cool with Slowick going there, but I'm very cool with them going 0-2 to start the season.
I like Joe Shane really annoys me as a GM.
Yes.
I think he needs to be stripped of his job.
Yep.
And never get a GM job again, unless it's for the Colts.
Yeah, last. Oh, that would be awesome. Last one, Carolina Panthers. I continue to root for Dave Tepper's misery, Bryce Young's misery. Bryce seems like a really nice kid. I'm not going to lie, I'm very entertained by his press conferences after these losses where he comes in with the sleeveless T-shirt on and he's scratching his left arm because he's nervous about the question. The only thing he's missing, Seth, is one of those bracelets that kids used to wear like back in the 80s that were kind of like a braided sort of bracelet that kids used to wear.
Yeah.
It's the only thing he's missing to look like he's truly 11 years old. At the press,
you're going up there wearing, he needs to start wearing swatches and jelly shoes. Somebody earlier pointed out when we were reading that article from The Athletic that recounts the story of C.J. Stroud after the Indianapolis loss in Week 2 last year.
Yeah.
C.J. Stroud getting up and giving a fiery speech, basically just telling everybody they better get their crap together. Somebody said, can you imagine Bryce Young doing that after one of their early losses last year? And No. Guy,
come on, guys.
I mean, I can, and it's really funny. Yeah.
Guy, come on, guys. We just need to play better than this.
Hey,
yeah.
How we doing? Yeah. Like, he walks into the locker room, and he's like,
what's up, guys? How we doing? Everyone good?
We're doing terrible. We just lost to the Colts, man. Why are you asking how we're doing? Yell at us.
Yeah, but we got to spend time with our friends, and friendship is important.
Jim Harbaugh is going to end up starting out 2-0 as a Charger coach. I mean, that's who the Panthers are playing this week.
Yeah.
They're playing the Chargers.
Harbaugh is the guy that, like, there's some coaches that come in, and honestly, this is going to sound weird. There was an element to Bill O'Brien as a head coach where he ran a tight ship. Yeah. You know, like at the very least, you run a tight ship and it pays dividends in comparison to some of these guys that get head coaching jobs these days. And they do not have the personality of a head coach. They are offensive coordinators who got the job because they're an offensive coordinator or vice versa. And they don't, you know, Cliff Kingsbury is this way. He's just sloppy in a lot of ways when it comes to like acting like an NFL coach.
Mm-hmm.
And Harbaugh is that, but to an extreme degree, the good part of it.
Yes.
That he's going to run a tight ship. He's going to have whichever offense he's running, things are going to be tight and crisp, and they're going to be a better team in a lot of respects, and they have a quarterback. So, yeah, I think I think that's a fair. What's the line on this? Is it like
the line on it? You want? Well, you're a gambler now. Let's guess. What do you think?
It's nine and a half.
Well, it's Chargers at Panthers. It's in Carolina, so keep that in mind. You still think nine?
And the Panthers' defense is good. Okay, so I'll say it's at 6.5 because they don't want to go all the way up to 7.
5.5. Yeah,
okay.
Chargers 5.5. Good guess.
Thank you for pointing out
venue matters.
Savvy, aren't I? I knew to adjust for 3 points, and then there you go.
You're getting good at this, man, for sure.
What's my win? If I guess it within 1 point, is that
For spreads? I don't know. Ben's the one who's the administrator of the ding and the buzz. If Seth is guessing a line, what does he need to be within to get your approval, Ben?
I have no idea. I don't know anything about this.
You don't know anything about gambling? I'm going to say within 1.5. If Seth is within 1.5... then he gets a ding. So give him a ding for that one. All right, good job. Yeah, and Seth gave himself. I'm going to give him one, too. Here, real quick. There we go. Yeah,
good job.
Thank you. Yeah, good job. Good job, all of us. So, man, there's some other ones, though, that are intrigued. Those are the ones I'm really hoping go 0-2 just for the drama on Monday. But Baltimore's 0-1 right now. Cincinnati's the big one. Dude, people are bailing on Cincinnati right
now. Yeah, I need to.
Play the Chiefs. They will be 0-2 on Monday.
Anybody in the AFC, Yeah. You put the Jaguars as a whatever if they start off 0-2. Oh, my gosh, Sean. They just paid their quarterback, and they're in the division.
They did, but I'm looking at it kind of specifically because they play Cleveland this weekend. You know what I mean?
Did you already explain that?
Not to that level of detail, but I had mentioned they played each other. But, yeah, it's okay.
All right,
yeah.
So if Jacksonville starts off 1-1, but Cleveland is 0-2, you're going to be happier
about
that.
I'll be fine because I think the Jags, being a mediocre team, will take care of itself over time.
I'm going to have my cake and eat it, too. I want the Jags to start off 0-2 and for Cleveland to win, but only because they have a brilliant defensive performance.
They have the same game script as the Bears last week.
Yeah, Deshaun throws three picks, but they somehow win the game, then I'd be cool with that. If Jacksonville, with their newly paid quarterback, starts off 0-2.
That's actually what they've done quite a bit of with Deshaun. Like, Deshaun's record as a starting quarterback with the Browns is 8-5. He's been horrible, but that's how good they are as a team, is they're 8-5 with him as a starting quarterback.
I'd kind of like to see Jaden Daniels do well, so I don't want to root for Washington to start off.
I like him too. Yeah,
I'd like to see him be the guy kind of that the old school scouts didn't trust because this, that, and the other, or there was a narrative written on him already by the time he was in his last year at LSU. I'd like it to work out for Jaden Daniels.
All right, up next, 5 reasons I hate you. We just got done hating on teams that could go 0-2, but we take aim directly at the Chicago Bears. We do it every Friday. 5 reasons I hate you for the Texans opponent this weekend. It is the Bears edition. Seth, you got a little injury report for the people here?
Oh, we do, Sean.
Yeah.
We certainly do. What are the injuries? Oh, Schultz is still out with an ankle. Malik Collins has an illness.
No, Nico Collins.
Nico Collins. Malik Collins, who knows? Nico Collins still has an injury, or has an illness, but he should be fine. Pierce with a hamstring, Scruggs with a groin. They are all limited. The two Bears wide receivers, this is the big one, Keenan Allen and Rome Odunze, are both still out. So a quarterback who was not on the same page as his receivers last week, Caleb Williams with Keenan Allen and Rome Odunze, will not have time to iron those things out in practice this week. So that is a good fine sign for your Houston Texans. That is your injury report brought to you by Mokarem Law.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, let's do it. 5 reasons I hate you. We do this every Friday before the Texans play.
I'm excited for this, Sean, because this is one. I don't have the natural hatred for the Bears that I do for other teams, like off the top of my head, maybe the Colts. I'm very much looking forward to really building up some hatred for the Chicago Bears.
Good, good. And this is a meat and potatoes 5 reasons I hate you. I didn't have to go to the weird laws of a city or, you know, like in Tennessee, they eat roadkill. This is a team
They're not nearly as inbred in Illinois as they are in Indiana. So,
In this part of Illinois. Southern Illinois is a little dicey. I mean, it butts up against, you know, Missouri and kind of Kentucky a little bit. And it's, you know, there's a little bit of waffle runoff into Illinois probably. But we can just go, man, I can just go 5 actual Bears employees right now. 5 reasons I hate you. I don't even need to get you mad at the city and it's cold weather and it's all the things that go with Chicago. Number 5, counting down, Matt Eberflus, the head coach. He looks like a pit boss at a casino. He's got his hair's kind of slicked back. He's really dorky. If you've watched Chicago Bears Hard Knocks during training camp, the visual of him walking around and dapping up guys before the game, like, he's such a nerd. And his last name sounds like a decongestant. I don't like that either. Eberflus. It sounds like something.
Eberflam or something.
Right. Yeah. Can I get Eberflus over the counter, or do I need a prescription for Eberflus?
Uberflam.
Yeah.
That's what we'll call him. We'll call him Uberflam.
And I don't think he's long for this world either. I just don't. I don't feel like I'm cool with
the coaching world or life in general.
No, just the coaching world.
He does look older than he's 54. I feel like he looks older than he's 54.
He's younger than me?
Yeah, he's 54. How old are you?
55.
I thought you were like my age. Okay, I didn't know you were old.
Yeah.
Okay. I kind of joke about being middle-aged, but I don't really. I'm really more like 36.
I don't feel 55, and people tell me I don't sound 55 either, which is good. Yeah, Eberflus is young. Wow, okay, well, that's... Now I just feel sorry for him. I don't hate him. But, yeah, I don't think he's long for the coaching world. I think Eberflus could get on the chopping block here. But I just don't like his vibe, and I don't like his last name, Eberflus. Okay, so that's
Uber Phlegm.
Number five, Uber Phlegm.
Damn, Uber Phlegm.
Matt Uber Phlegm. Okay, now it's getting good. Reason number four, their GM, Ryan Poles, never met a microphone or a reporter that was going to write about him that he didn't like. Ryan Poles, and let me preface this by saying, I think Ryan Poles has done a decent job. You know, he fleeced Carolina. I mean, good job fleecing Carolina. Yay. I mean, but you fleeced Carolina for the pick that got Caleb Williams. As you point out many times, Seth, you could have just drafted CJ Stroud, but okay. But I think generally speaking, he's done a decent job, but it's just annoying how much of a pub hound he is.
And he does a masterful job of these sap writers who want to write long think pieces. As long as you invite them into your office and treat them like actual human beings, these writers will write any damn thing about you.
Yes.
In a positive way. And ultimately, Sean, I don't know. I don't consume as much national media as a lot of people. Has anybody really been framing this as like, okay, this is Ryan Poles going up against a quarterback that he could have drafted? Like, Ryan Poles is getting all this praise heaped upon him for drafting, putting themselves in position to draft Caleb Williams.
No.
And he could have had Stroud. They could have been into year two of this process already.
That might be the best thing that happened to Ryan Poles, is that Carolina screwed it up so bad that they're the lightning rod for C.J. Stroud. Passing on C.J. Stroud criticism. Everybody heaps it on Carolina.
Right.
And they forget the fact that that wasn't even Carolina's pick originally. That was Chicago's pick originally. No, you're 100% right. A, in your take that they could have drafted C.J. Stroud, and B, that not enough people point to the fact that the Bears could have drafted C.J.
Well, and I'll just go back. The deep cut on this is, Sean, that he did attend my high school rival. Well, they used to be when they were good at football.
You hated him already, yeah.
Yeah, like Victor has far surpassed Canandaigua in terms of their football prowess since I left. But Poles did go to a place where everybody knows kids from Canandaigua. Like, you can't trust them.
Yeah.
They're just dirtbags.
That's what I've learned.
Dirtbags, all of them. Were they pretty much demographically the exact same as us? Yes, but those kids were dirtbags.
Dirtbag. Yeah.
Yes,
they were.
that old high school hatred you get. That's when tribal behavior is at its best.
Yes.
This damn town that pretty much is exactly like us,
right.
but because of geography, these kids are dirt, man.
Middle class, white, upper state New York, but they were the dirtbag ones.
Yeah.
So take that, Poles.
The Canandaigua Braves.
Yeah. Take that, Poles. Who's not white, by the way. So I guess, I'm just thinking out in the country, out in the sticks out there. Caleb Williams, number three. Reason number three, Caleb Williams. And it's not. I'm not going to go into this thing that some people do. Hey, he paints his nails and he carries a Gucci purse and this. I don't care. A lot of C.J. Stroud probably carries a really nice bag that quarterbacks 25 years ago or 50 years ago would not have. These highly paid guys are fashionistas now. So I don't get upset about that with Caleb Williams. I still am upset of the visual of Caleb Williams jumping into the stands and crying into his mother's bosom after a loss in college last year. And mm-hmm. them, like, placing a shirt or an umbrella over his face or something so we can't see. Like, he's some sort of perp walking into the courtroom and he's putting a coat over his head so we can't see his face.
Yeah.
That still bothers me. And I know people are going to say, I thought it was a cool, sensitive moment with a mother and a child. It was. It just didn't belong on a football. Like, Caleb, you're really going to be the first overall pick in the draft. Man up.
I don't know if even Laramie Tunsil could call Caleb Williams a dog. And Laramie doles that compliment out.
Yes.
To just anybody and everybody. You're a dog, and you're a dog, and you're a Caleb. We'll see. We'll see. We'll see. Yeah, okay. We're just going to hold on a second. There's no gift under your chair. Okay?
No. No.
There's not a little dog leash down there for you.
Yeah. So Caleb Williams, man, like, I just still can't get over that. Like, Caleb Williams crying into his mom's bosom.
Plus, let's not forget that he... at least reportedly, his management team was interested in getting ownership, ownership of whichever team he went to.
Oh.
So I don't think at this point, I don't think the Bears would be interested just yet. We'll see whether he's whether they're going to be tempted to give him 5% ownership franchise.
That.
Yeah,
I forgot. Great call, Seth. I forgot about that. All right, let's get to the last two. These are former Texans that are on the team. Who, when I've interacted with them personally, each of them, and I have before, they both seem like really, really nice individuals. But this is not a segment for the nice. Jacob Martin is on IR designated to return for the Chicago Bears. People are like, why do you hate Jacob Martin? Like, he's part of the clowny trade, so he's got that stink on him, whatever. No, Jacob Martin is the last active vestige of the worst gimmick in NFL history. The Rock Boys. Rock Boys linebackers, when they'd get their occasional sack, getting down on one knee and all strumming the old banjo together out there. And it was so stupid. And Deshaun Watson joining in was cringy for me. I hated the Rock Boys. I liked them each individually as people. Collectively, you know how sometimes they say the whole is greater than the sum of its parts?
Yeah.
This is the whole being microscopically less than the sum of its parts. Jacob Martin, Whitney Merciless, couple other guys all seem like really nice dudes. Collectively, when they start strumming their air guitars, they sucked. I hated the Rock Boys.
This is the part is like one of them would do like the Pete Townsend windmill, and I'm like, and all I could do is like, listen, you look great, great, great musical artist, Pete Townsend, but not my football player. Okay, if you're gonna choose. Of all the rock and roll guitarists that you might have chosen, why Pete Townsend? Why? Why?
I don't think they know.
No, yeah.
It funny.
Just felt like they might have been like the glam rockers or something,
yeah.
You know?
It was a bad game. Well, here's the thing. Like, none of them were great football players. Like, if you're, you know, like...
Well, no, when they started doing the cosplay on the way into the stadium, where they would dress up like their favorite anime characters, that was the part that really started to get annoying.
Well, that wasn't the Rock Boys. That was the inside linebackers. That was McKinney.
Oh, that's right.
And that Cunningham and Dylan Cole and those guys.
Okay, good call. So
we had the Rock Boys, the cosplay crew, and the lunch pail crew. Remember the lunch pail crew of the defensive linemen, the defensive tackles? It was, oh, God, it was brutal.
Division champs, Brian.
Yeah, division champs. All that division for the 19th Brian. Best defense in the AFC.
AFC NFL. South champs, Sean.
All right, it's true. We're getting a few texts reminding me of this. DeAndre Carter is on the Bears. Oh, funny you should say, Texter. Yes, DeAndre Carter is on the Bears.
There's a big reason that the Bears pulled that win off.
He was.
A bad offensive performance. DeAndre Carter, very good.
He was very good. No, the Texans need to pay attention. But DeAndre Carter is number one on the five reasons to hate the Bears. And I shall remind you why right here. Let's go back to January of 2020. The Chiefs are beginning to mount a comeback here. On the Texans, I believe the score is 24-14. Texans have been up 24-0. Chiefs have quickly put some points on the board. Kickoff to DeAndre Carter.
Here's Carter at the 1 yard line, straight ahead. 5, 10, 15, cuts right, 20, and the ball is out.
Oh no!
And the Chiefs got it. Thompson running left inside the 10, and he's down to the 8 yard line.
Oh my goodness.
Darwin Thompson, a running back, had the ball pop right into his hands, and the Chiefs have a first and goal.
That's the moment I felt they're losing this game. When the Chiefs made it 24-14, I'm like, all right, well, it was a little fluky. The Texans were up 24-0 in that game. They needed a block punt for a touchdown. They needed a 50-yard deep shot to Kenny Stills. A lot of the things that probably need to happen for the Bears to beat the Texans this weekend were happening for the Texans in that Chiefs playoff game. DeAndre Carter fumbling. And by the way, he had fumble issues as a returner before that. Like, he's... So that's what made it so infuriating. Like,
that'd be nice. That would be a little bit of come full circle if part of the loss for the Bears would include a DeAndre Carter fumble of some sort.
I want to say, I got to go back and look at the back of his football card. I want to say DeAndre Carter did fumble against the Texans in the last couple years in a game. I'll have to go back and look. I'll look during the break. But you're right. It would be poetic justice if it were to happen on national TV on Sunday night against the Bears.
DeAndre Carter, remember, he went on with your buddy Jim Rome and talked some smack about the Texans.
He did. Yeah, that's true.
That
that's right.
Also. Was he with the Chargers at the time?
I think he was with the Chargers at that time. Yeah. All right, maybe he wasn't so nice then.
Jim Rome, we should send that audio to
No. You're thinking of Andre Roberts.
You're thinking of Andre Roberts.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And he was on the Chargers. Andre Roberts was.
What year would that have been? Like back in 2000?
That was the Culley year. Because remember that was Nick's first free agent that he signed. Trivia question.
It was Nick Caserio was the GM. Send that audio to Nick.
Oh yeah.
Because Nick likes Jim Rome. I'm sure Nick heard it at the time, Nick knows that Rome's got to do what Rome's got to do. They're good buds now.
One thing I can promise you, Nick did hear it at the time, probably.
Yeah,
loyal listener. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Five reasons I hate you. Right there. Text in yours. Text in reasons. Someone mentions Jonathan Owens is on the Bears, too. I don't hate Jonathan Owens.
Text in any smack talk about Canandaigua, too.
Yeah.
I'm going to be back up there later this year during the bye week. I want to just go. I'm going to go through town with a megaphone.
Dude, you know what I'm most looking forward to? The many different ways people spell Canandaigua on the text page. Can't wait to see that.
It was Native American for the chosen spot.
Ah. A little trivia for you there. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. One big thing the Texans need to fix from last week's game against the Colts. Matt Burke was asked about it. How correctable is this? We will let you hear from Matt Burke and let you hear what it is coming up next.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, here's Payne and Pendergast.
Texans gave up a lot of big plays on Sunday against the Colts. Three plays of 54 yards or more. That's what kept the Colts in the game. Matt Burke, defensive coordinator, met with the media yesterday, and they asked him about that. Are some of the deep plays easily correctable?
Anytime you put anything on tape that, whether someone thinks that it's something they did or something we did, you know, that they're going to try to take advantage of those things. So obviously, you know, we shouldn't be in those positions. I mean, a couple of them are 50-50 balls, and we just got to make some plays and maybe technique-wise put ourselves in a better position to make those plays, you know what I mean, where you're not going backwards or going forwards or however we want it done. But, we're always trying to correct the things that, whether it's the deep balls, the run game, any of that stuff. So I would anticipate people trying to test us on things until we prove that it's not a good route to take for us.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, winning a game makes such a difference in what you focus on and what we do. You know, like, if they had lost that game, Seth, we would have been talking about two things nonstop this week. The end of half gaffe with the referees and the Texans letting the clock run out. We'd have been talking about that, which would have been so painful because it's so hard to lay out and frame on the radio. But the other thing we'd have been talking about would have been the big plays. And how can you let an inferior team beat you on basically, it was a four-play game for the Colts, a block punt and three gigantic chunk plays. That's
right,
it.
Yeah. And yet that's a real thing. If it had been flukish by the Texans' defense in allowing big plays, then that would be one thing. But this is what they did last year, was that they would play steadily good defense but then allow these huge plays. So I think they're a little bit more correctable this year, except for the question of, all right, is Jimmy Ward has he lost a step because of his age? Was it just rustiness? Was it being week one and not really having a good scouting report yet? Because it's a new offense for everybody in week one, basically. That's the big question, is that can you play defense for all however many plays you're out there in a game? Yeah, on a down-by-down basis, the Texans beat the snot out of the Colts. That would be the really frustrating thing, is that the Colts ran, how many offensive plays, Sean? 45?
45 total, yes.
45 offensive plays. Anthony Richardson completed less than 50% of his passes. The Jonathan Taylor rushed for 3 yards per carry. The Texans did all of the nuts and bolts stuff right 95% of the time, but that 5% of the time they didn't, it was really, really bad. So cleaning that stuff up is essential. And I did like what Matt Burke said. It could be tempting to say, well, those are 50-50 balls, and sometimes the receiver's going to make the play. They were 50-50 balls in which defensive backs weren't in position properly. They weren't in position to really get their eyes on the ball and put the hand on the ball. Or in the case of whatever happened on A.D. Mitchell being wide open downfield, whether it was a blown coverage or just bad play by Derek Stingley, that was – because sometimes sometimes the blown coverage, you can't pick it up on film. It's because a guy was completely aligned in the wrong spot on the field. So whatever the reason was for that, you can't be doing that every week.
That's funny. Like, if you take it literally, like, it's a 50-50 ball. Like, no, it's really not. It's really like a 80-20 ball or something like in terms of outcomes. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
If it were literally 50-50, they should run that play every play. You know.
Well, the one long shot to Alec Pierce late in the game.
Yeah.
That was technically a 50-50 ball. If Richardson had put more juice on it, it was an easy touchdown.
Yeah.
You know, because Pierce had to come back for the ball.
Yeah.
And Ward was playing catch up to an extreme degree.
Yep.
Like, yeah, Pierce was gaining separation when he had to start slowing down for the ball.
Yep. Here's another one from Matt Burke on Kalen Bullock, whose name, if Jimmy Ward keeps struggling like he did against the Colts last week, Kalen Bullock's name is going to come up every week in press conferences. Here's Matt Burke on Kalen Bullock.
Yeah, I think we've talked about Kalen a few times here. His history as a deep field player in college and what he did there and sort of just has a pretty innate understanding of those type of positions on the field and how to take advantage of those. He made plays in the balls in college. He made plays in the balls in training camp. And obviously week one, he made plays in the balls there. So I do think he has a pretty good feel from those sort of deep zone areas and where he's fitting. And then, you know, as you get to this level and start, you know, formation recognition and what routes you're getting out of those formations, I think that's probably what he's, you know, alluding to in terms of just like studying the film now. And now that's the second level of, okay, I know where I'm supposed to be now. What am I expecting from pre-snap formations or what I'm getting there? And I think, you know, that kind of heightens your anticipation of what you're getting and can maybe put you in a cleaner position to make those breaks. So it was a good start for him. Excited to see him again this week.
He played 25 of the 45 snaps.
It wasn't spot duty. He was out there on half the snaps, over half the snaps in the game. And I think that we've talked about this, the establishing trust with the coaches, that they know you're not going to go out there and blow up their game plan with mental errors, all of that. I think it was a pretty clean game by Kalen Bullock in that regard. The stuff that Burke's talking about there, it's a part of, man, the really good defensive backs in the NFL. It's amazing how much they can tell pre-snap. Some of it's just automatic with the splits and the tendencies and everything else like that. That's where they really start to take it to the next level. But that's for getting to that extreme upside. I think with Kalen Bullock, so much of it is just natural in his athleticism that, like, as long as he continues to build on the mental part of it, I think he's going to end up being really good. And I'll go back to something Dom Capers used to say over and over again. Sean, I mean, you could tell me this. I don't know how long you've been watching football. Has it been more than 2 weeks?
It's like almost a year now. Yeah.
Okay. So if you've watched football for 2 weeks and watched a couple of pregame shows, you know that turnovers are one of the biggest indicators in whether you win or lose.
Now that you
game.
Mention it, yes, so, I've
yeah,
seen that.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's why you're never in my keys to victory. I try real hard never to put turnovers down there because it's always a big deal.
Right.
But Dom Capers, the way you would frame it to the players was, if you show yourself to be a guy who can take the ball away, we're going to find a way to put you on the field. So always be a guy that gets the ball out of the offense's hands.
That's
and Kalen Bullock is exactly that. So you, trust me, they want Kalen Bullock out there. As much as we might clamor for it, he is a guy who can take the ball away from the offense. They want to get him out there and get him up to speed to be a veteran defensive back ASAP, and the first outing was a pretty good show.
Dude, especially when you combine a guy like that playing center field with a pass rush like the Texans hope to have this year, you know, and you've got quarterbacks that are making hasty decisions, sailing balls, things like that. That's really good. Here's Matt Burke. This is fun. I haven't heard this cut yet. I'm looking forward to hearing it. Who plays scout team Caleb Williams for you guys?
Who plays scout team Caleb Williams?
They're all a quarter Davis and blow. We don't do anything crazy like that. We did try to every now and then we'll tell him if something's not there, like get out and just to get a feel for it, you know. So, but we don't do a specific like who would you play? Simsy? Okay,
run around, man,
really challenging us, huh? All right, I hope Simsy's a little quicker than Caleb. We'll see.
Steven.
Yeah. Shots fired.
Yeah.
Your kickoff returner is faster than your quarterback.
Matt Burke calls Caleb Williams slow-footed.
Well, I think it's valid. You don't look at Caleb Williams as a Michael Vick type of guy.
No.
It's not like he's really good at the improvisational side of things in scrambling, but it's not like he's such an incredible athlete that you're like, ah, crap, what are we going to do?
Right.
And he's not, He can extend the play. He can scramble and throw on the run. He did have a couple nice instances of throwing on the run in the game on Sunday. Like, he did have some nice plays in that otherwise abysmal performance. Mm-hmm. But I think it's a lot like last week where, and Burke pointed this out in the press conference, they did a pretty good job of contain rushing Anthony Richardson. When they didn't, Anthony Richardson took advantage of it.
That's
he had
right.
that one long run up the middle where, you know, one of the defensive tackles needs to be more planted in the middle right
yeah,
there to make the
yeah.
to at least
slow him down.
You want the quarterback to at least have to make one cut before yeah. he gets out of the backfield.
That's right.
When you give him a freeway down the middle of the field like that, Anthony Richardson is going to kill you.
That guy.
Yeah. Yeah, he seeped out the side of the pocket at least once. So, yep. but that was part of, you know, Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter go into that game knowing last week that it's not their best day to get three sacks. You know, you're going to be just trying to compress the pocket as yeah. much as possible. And I think for the most part, they did that. I think with Caleb Williams, same thing. Caleb, just like Justin Fields before him, because he has such great arm talent, he's never bothered to really work on his footwork at all.
Yeah.
And you saw a few instances in that game where it might not look like much, and it might look like the pressure didn't bother him, but he's clicking his heels and his feet are kind of off platform, and he airmails a wide open receiver.
Yeah.
You know,
yep.
If he wants to be better than Justin Fields, he's got to clean that stuff up.
We got some funny texts in response to 5 reasons I hate you. I asked people to text in reasons to hate the Bears. I'll read some more of them. We're up against it. I'll just read this one. This one made me laugh the hardest. I hate the Bears because I'm a Bears fan.
That's good. Yeah.
That's really good. All right, into the 9 o'clock hour we go. We'll circle back to the Astros in the 9 o'clock hour. The biggest news from the NFL last night from the Thursday night game shows just how precarious it is for really every single NFL team. We will talk about that coming up next.